Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Please turn off or mute electronic devices. We do have Assistant AG Mark Harris present. Our mission statement: the Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. Dr. James, could you please do the roll call?
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Wright is absent.
Thank you. We do have a quorum. All right, so we're going to start with the initial investigative reviews. I'll give you the order. We'll start with case 2514 as number one. Then we'll go to case 2519, 2520, 2521, 2522, and 2523. We'll go back up to number two, case 2516. And then we'll go in order from there. Okay, so we'll go ahead and for case 2514, Kathleen Backus, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front line?
Yes. Case 2514. The complainant is Joshua Brown. The respondent is Kathleen Backus, DVM. On July 1st, 2025, Zucchini, a 9-year-old female German Shepherd, was presented to respondent after falling off a cliff. The dog was evaluated for a suspected spinal injury. Complainant contends that respondent had the fear of the dog in and out of the X-ray room, encouraged movement of the dog, and did not refer the dog to the specialist. Respondent denies the claims. Respondent stated that the pet owners insisted on carrying the dog. They were educated on the importance of keeping the dog immobile and recommended the dog be seen by a specialist. The dog was seen later that day by a specialist. Imaging confirmed L1 to L2 intervertebral disc fracture and stabilization surgery was performed. Then the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 32-22-32-11 gross incompetence. Respondent recommended and provided an inappropriate treatment, laser therapy, which provided no benefit to the patient based on the severity of the injury. The dog was acutely injured and paralyzed.
Thank you.
And the motion was approved by 3-0.
Thank you. Okay. So we do have the respondent and attorney present, if you'd like to come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning. You could please state your name for the record and introduce counsel.
Sure. Dominique Barrett, counsel for Dr. Kathy Backus.
Thank you. So you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I'm going to go ahead and address the board on behalf of my client. Thank you for allowing us to address the board. And to begin, Dr. Backus is a relief veterinarian at Page Animal Hospital. It's not an emergency clinic. The signs on the wall indicate that it's not an emergency clinic. The documents that the patients, the owner signed, indicate that this is not an emergency clinic. The complainant contacted the practice, and Debbie Roundtree, who is actually here, one of the owners of the practice, answered the telephone when the claimants made the complaint and advised that their dog had fallen off cliff, and immediately she advised them that this is not an emergency clinic, that you should take the dog to a specialist, to the emergency department, and the closest is about 3 hours away, either Flagstaff or Phoenix. And the complainants indicated to Ms. Roundtree and then later to Dr. Backus that they did not want to take the dog to an emergency clinic. that they wanted to come into the practice there, even though they were advised to. Because we didn't know, the doctor did not know what the state of the dog was at that time, and, you know, knowing that the dog had fallen off of a cliff, they didn't know if it would even make a 3-hour drive to Phoenix. They indicated that they can come in and we can evaluate the dog. At that time, Dr. Backus was in surgery upon arrival, so immediately they recommended, you know, that they do x-rays. The owner refused to allow the staff to actually carry the dog to do the x-rays. Dr. Backus, because the claimants continued to advise the staff at the practice that, you know, do something for the pain, do something for the pain. Obviously, at that point, they didn't know if there were internal injuries or not. So while Dr. Backus was waiting for the blood results, she indicated, let's offer cold light laser treatment for comfort for the dog while the blood was running to evaluate. The initial x-rays appeared to indicate that there were no internal injuries, but she advised that there would need to do additional spinal x-rays, and the results revealed that there was a spinal injury, and the clients again insisted that the pet be hospitalized, and Dr. Backus informed them that the dog needed, again, specialty care, but they refused. She advised that she could only provide comfort care. The practice does not have injectable steroids, muscle relaxants, or opioids. They don't keep those in the practice. And again, they indicated that this dog did need specialty care, and they did not want to travel to do that. So at that point, because of Dr. Backus' concern, she was advised them that she was only going to provide comfort care, said, you know, make sure that the dog is comfortable. And they had an RV. They apparently were on vacation, and to bring them back, and she was going to do laser therapy. They finally decided, upon encouragement, that they were going to take the dog to a neurologist. So at that point, Dr. Backus was very pleased that they were going to take the dog to a neurologist, and she proceeded to quickly prepare her medical records and then fax them over along with the x-rays to the practice. We think that a lot of the statements, a lot of the claims made by the owners are inaccurate. Again, the owner of the practice is here, and she's the one who actually saw the patients, the owners, when they first arrived, when Dr. Backus was in surgery, and she's available to explain to you as well. And we ask that this claim be dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. James, you're the lead. Did you want to hear from the witness?
I don't think I have anything for the witness. We don't have the complaint.
The complaint's not present? No. Okay, so no complaint. Thank you very much. You can go ahead and step back. So Dr. James, you're the lead on the case.
Yeah, so this was a tough one as I was going through it, based on what the investigative committee had found as with regards to the laser therapy. So I think from everything else that was submitted, as far as the clinic got her in quickly, they were trying to do the best they could, they're not an emergency clinic, the communication seemed fine. All that they tried to do for this patient seemed appropriate. And then there's this he said, she said on how did they recommend referral or not, and how strongly they pushed it. It sounds like in the statement we just heard that it was pushed pretty heavily. And then it sounds like in the owner's statement that maybe that wasn't quite as clear. I think that's the part that we still have to kind of decipher amongst the committee or the board. And then I think the other piece is this idea of laser therapy. Like, I'm not even sure if that's something that I would have pursued, because then it kind of leaves this false impression to the owners that that might actually help. And while I'm not, I wouldn't say it would hurt, and I do think laser can help in healing, I don't think in a situation like this, it's going to make a dent. And so I think that's really where I had concern with it, is I think the veterinarian was trying to help and the veterinarian was doing what they could do in hopes that the owners would then go to an emergency clinic or go to a specialist. But it really leaves kind of this weird, like, how do you expect to treat a spinal injury with laser?
Yeah, I think it was helpful to hear that the clinic did not have opioids, because that was my question. Like, why would you use that? Like, I, again, don't deny that that can be useful in some cases, but not what I would use for acute trauma,
right?
And acute pain control. I think for me, when I look at the records, we hear that there was referral to go to an emergency hospital. We hear that there was, especially on the front end, like, don't even bring them here, go to the emergency. But I'm not seeing it in the records that there was a communication or recommendation for them to go someplace else. I mean, the plan is to give carprofen and come back for laser therapy for 2 days.
Right.
So, you know, the medical record is kind of the end all be all, right? And so that piece of communication is not necessarily there.
Yeah, and I would also say, I just feel like when you give somebody a treatment option, and you could have sent these x-rays to a neurologist, you could have done some other things. Like, well, let's just talk, we could have done some other things here. And I guess at this point it was like, my options were either to move it to an informal or move forward with a consent agreement on what was found by the investigative committee. Because I don't know that I have any additional questions. Like, I didn't, I felt like the doctor had provided everything we needed, but I also thought this was a pretty severe violation for not going to an informal. You know, I just want to make sure that we hear all the facts. But
I would agree with informal. There was a lot of discrepancy between in the stories.
Yeah.
And some things about putting the patient on the floor to see how they could move around after we determined it was a spinal case and things like that. And I just want to hear. I want to hear more.
All right, so I'll make a motion in the case of 2514 that we move it to an informal.
Second. All right, a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right, motion passes. All right, so we have case 2519. 2520, 2521, 2522, and 2523. Tracy, are those all the same front load?
Yes, they are all the same.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and read one.
Thank you.
Case 2519 is Christine Seams. 2520 is Jill Starks. 2521 is Anna Wilkins. 2522 is Connie Popey. And 2523 is Emma Holton, PBM. And the complainant is Randy Jones. The respondents are as previously mentioned. On August 31st, 2023, Buddy, an 8.5-year-old Chihuahua mix, was transferred to Arizona Veterinary Critical Care Center due to a need for a ventilator. Non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema was suspected. Upon arrival at AVET, the dog was evaluated. Treatment for sustained euthanasia was discussed with complainant's ex-wife, along with the risks of mechanical ventilation. It was further discussed that ARDS from pneumonia have a less than 30% success rate in weaning off the ventilator. Complainant was financially responsible for the dog and approving estimates. The dog's condition was also discussed with complainant. Complainant and his ex-wife approved the treatment plan and estimates provided. The dog's care was transferred to associate veterinarians at the premises throughout the dog's hospitalization. The treatment regimen and ventilation was adjusted as needed based on the dog's condition. Complainant and his ex-wife were updated on the dog's condition daily and were provided estimates for continued care. On September 6, 2023, the pet owners were advised that the dog was no longer tolerating the ventilator changes and the dog may not make it through the night. The pet owners wanted to wait the following day to make any decisions on the dog's care. A short time later, the dog arrested. CPR was performed, and the dog's owners were contacted. The pet owners requested CPR to cease, and the dog passed away. Then the committee concluded that no violation of the veterinary had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the case be dismissed with no violation, and that is for all the cases previously mentioned, 2519, 2520, 2521, 2522, and 2523.
Thank you. So we do have counsel here monitoring. Okay, and then do we have any of the respondents present? No? Okay. And then we have the complainant present.
We have a respondent.
Yes, the complainant.
Yeah, so no respondent, right? Okay. And then we do have the complainant present, Randy Jones and Jennifer Jones. You can go ahead and come forward if you'd like. Hello there.
Hi.
So we do have the information that you had provided and have reviewed that. Do you have any new information for the board?
I just have a statement. That
oh, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure you didn't have anything new. Do you have anything new? Okay.
No.
Go ahead and make your statement.
Okay. Is it 5 minutes each or just 5 minutes together? We both prepared statements.
Okay. Are they different or?
Yeah, mine's 3 minutes.
Oh, that's fine. You can go ahead.
Mine's going to be, if I rush, it'll be 5.
Okay.
Okay. So, good morning. I'm Jennifer Jones. I'm Buddy's owner. Buddy was my daughter's dog. We rescued him as a puppy from the pound in 2016 after Christmas and nursed him to health after he spent 2 weeks in at hellhole. Buddy was a member of our family. In spite of ABCCC hospital records that I did not see until after the fact, as Buddy's owner, I did not receive adequate information to make informed decisions regarding Buddy's care and had to rely upon doctor's verbal recommendations to guide us through the treatment protocols. In reading my notes and hospital records since Buddy died, I learned ABCCC diagnosed Buddy with ARDS. I recently learned ARDS refers to a type of lung damage that can result from a variety of causes, including illness, trauma, or even as a complication following certain medical procedures. ABCCC performed many medical procedures on Buddy 24 hours per day for 6 days. I also have since learned ARDS is characterized by an acute inflammatory response followed by pulmonary or extrapulmonary insults. ARDS progresses through phases culminating in either terminal, chronic fibrotic stage, or resolution. ARDS is associated with long-term impairments in brain and muscle function that significantly impact the quality of life of those who survive. In addition, I have learned ARDS often causes refractory hypoxemia, which is a severe breathing problem that occurs when a patient has inadequate oxygenation despite normal levels of inspired oxygen. It is a common issue for patients on medical ventilation for acute respiratory failure. In spite of these facts, each day the doctors kept encouraging me, telling me I was doing the right thing, citing another case where a dog survived. In later discussions with the doctors after Buddy died, they told me they did not want to give up on Buddy if there was still a chance. Really? Was that really their decision to make? Each day the doctors led us to believe Buddy still had a sustained 30% chance of survival, but in retrospect, they never communicated the degree to which his body would likely recover in the event he did survive. With the possibility of brain damage caused by bad ventilator settings, leading to an early on extremely low blood oxygen scare event, Buddy likely would have been brain dead had he survived. Never once did the doctors suggest or even hint to not start nor discontinue ventilator care for Buddy and move to end-of-life care or euthanasia. Although we asked questions constantly, the doctors never substantially answered them. Discussions should have considered to treat or not to treat, such as medical futility, quality of life, disease progression, and treatment side effects versus potential benefits. If the treatment was unlikely to significantly improve Buddy's condition and could cause harm, it should have been deemed medically futile and not administered. Futile interventions increase a patient's pain and discomfort in the final days and weeks of life, give patients and family false hope, delay end-of-life and comfort care, expend finite medical resources, and expend finite financial resources. However, each day the doctor simply continued to tell his buddy he would need to be on a ventilator for another 2 or 3 days, while insisting on daily prepayment of fees, which was promptly done in goodwill, with no indication of duration nor changes into the on their estimated 30% chance of recovery. We were assured multiple times we were doing the right thing. It was only when my daughter told me, 14 years old, the doctors had told her it could be weeks, even months, that Buddy would need to be on a ventilator. They never told me that. Their mantra was always another 2 or 3 days. Upon learning that, we decided to go ahead with euthanasia the next morning, a delay we needed to come to terms with Buddy's grave condition. Apparently, Buddy's condition was worse than the doctors were letting on, as evidenced by his death. Buddy died of heart failure within 2 hours of our decision. I understand the investigative committee recommended to dismiss with no violation for each doctor in Buddy's care, even though the committee had discussed 30% chance of recovery was unlikely, the doctor's inability to provide a prognosis was concerning, and the doctors were not aggressive enough in finding a diagnosis. Moreover, looking at Arizona Veterinary Medical Practices Act, I found multiple instances of gross incompetence, gross negligence, malpractice, medical incompetence, and negligence. These doctors put us and my dog through hell for 6 days, and now the investigative committee says to just cast it aside. I affirm critical errors were made that were not documented in hospital records. For example, 1, the doctor's inability to take an arterial blood sample, which is crucial to early ventilator settings and treatment approach, that prompted doctors to prematurely wean Buddy off of the machine, an error Buddy never recovered from. 2, an early low blood oxygen scare event due to bad ventilator settings that likely left Buddy brain dead. 3, overdose of sedative, an event verbally communicated to me through a phone call, again, not documented in hospital records. 4, an inability to arrive at therapeutic ventilator settings, prompting a late discussion of referring to a ventilator expert. Did that ever happen? 5, inability of Dr. Seams to articulate in any manner Buddy's condition during her nighttime shift that very morning of Buddy's death. We have spent countless hours of our schedules to address this matter. In fact, I had to cancel a pulmonary specialist appointment that took me 2 months to get for my daughter, who is still sick from pneumonia since last November. In short, this matters. She has been surviving on a steroid nebulizer. Is that what Buddy got? I don't think so. In the meeting in last December, I understand the committee would have read my statements prior to the meeting. However, I later learned the committee members were not even aware of that my 11-page written statement. In fact, during my verbal statement at the meeting, my instructions were to not repeat what I had already submitted. Therefore, the committee did not have my complete statement to consider. I urge you to reread my statement, all 11 pages, and carefully consider the actions I call for. I believe the doctors knew there was never going to be a recovery for Buddy, but continued to encourage and recommend further treatment for an unknown period of time, regardless of the fact that treatments were not only failing to help, but causing more injury and unnecessary suffering, ultimately resulting in Buddy's death. I believe the doctors unreasonably extend Buddy's life to collect daily fees rather than for Buddy's best interest. In short, I hold ABCCC and all attending physicians personally and medically accountable in the week Buddy was in their care. Since Buddy was in their 24-hour ICU, attending physicians had equal access to records, and all are complicit in the events of that week. Given the multiple systematic problems within ABCCC organization, for the board to simply dismiss the complaints would be an act of severe negligence and disservice to our community. We still have questions and hereby request further investigations. These doctors must be held accountable. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry for your loss. Mr. Jones, if you could introduce yourself.
My name is Randy Jones. I'm an internal control auditor by profession. For the past 25 years, my early training was with Motorola Freescale Semiconductor for 10 years. I tell you that just to give you a little background. My job is to identify situations and issues that don't pass a smell test. I've read Jennifer Jones' account of what occurred with Buddy. I can attest that the response I got from the chair of the December 3rd, 2024 investigative committee, when I mentioned Jen's list of specific mistakes by the AVECC, our referred to home at Arizona Veterinary, during my 5-minute address back then, was what list of mistakes? He quickly covered, recovered. Oh, there it is, when he took a minute to scroll down. Anyway, so I encourage the full committee to listen to the recording of the December 3rd meeting to validate for themselves that this is what was said, and there was not enough time for those committee members to read Jen's entire 11-page complaint before rendering their recommendation, because obviously we were there. As such, I would urge this committee to disregard the investigative committee's recommendation and start over. My perspective coincides with the comments that Jennifer just shared with you. As you consider these comments, ask yourselves this question. Would you spend another $30,000 to save your 9-year-old dog who has been seen by two previous vets over the last 3 weeks at a cost of $6,500? That was, you know, $6,500, then another $30,000 on top of that. To a reasonable person, this does not pass a smell test. Frankly, I don't know of anyone who would or could do that. Now, my perspective, I was not aware that Buddy was sick until I received a text from Jennifer on September 1st telling me to go to Queen Creek Vet if I wanted to say goodbye to Buddy. So I went there, I got there, I spent 25 minutes with Buddy saying goodbye. It was, he was in rough shape. When Jennifer and my daughter showed up, I went to the lobby so that they could say goodbye. And then while I'm in the lobby, I asked if there was a balance on Buddy's care. That was part of the $6,500 out of pocket before we went to Arizona Veterinary. And, you know, so I picked up the tab for $1,900. I'm just giving the perspective on the amount of dollars that we had already spent and the rough condition that Buddy was in before he even went to Arizona Veterinary. Next thing I know, Buddy is being prepared to go to Arizona Veterinary. And I want to emphasize that Jennifer was told that Buddy needed to be put in a special transport with oxygen to make a 20-minute trip to Arizona Veterinary, or he would likely die, is what we were told. Doesn't pass the smell test. And then for the next 6 nights, while Buddy was at Arizona Veterinary, I get a call from Arizona Veterinary's billing department shaking me down, that's my term, for payment. Pay. Buddy dies was a message that my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter, would remember for the rest of her life. I paid because we were being told that it's the right thing to do. And Buddy was improving. Okay. Medical records show that, but you know, Jen just went through that. The Buddy was not getting better. Again, doesn't pass the smell test. In closing, this case deserves a full investigation, in my opinion. No reasonable person who actually read Jennifer's list of mistakes by Arizona Veterinary could dismiss the issue with no violation and still keep the public's trust. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just want to make a comment that the committee did have Ms. Jones's statement way in advance of the meeting. They did read it. It was labeled witness statement, so they may not have recognized that it was Ms. Jones's statement, but they all did have it and did read it.
Okay, thank you. So, Dr. Thompson, you're the lead. And typically, we don't ask questions, but do you have any questions before I excuse the complainants?
I don't have any questions, but I'm very sorry for what Buddy went through and what you and your family went through. Thank you for all of the information that you provided.
Thank you. Okay, you can go ahead and step back. Thank you. Okay. So Dr. Thompson, you are the lead. So
we often say that these are difficult cases, and this one is truly a difficult case on multiple levels. One, it's a medically challenging case. Anytime you have a ventilator involved, that really changes the intensity of the treatment. I 150% understand where the family is coming from and the questions that they're asking. What becomes very difficult is that while in their mind they're asking these questions on who would do this and why are we not, you know, asking about euthanasia, there are actually plenty, just as many people that would willingly go through these processes and do these steps. So it does become hard as a veterinarian in trying to determine, like, when do we, you know, what is a reasonable thing to go forward. One of the things that really bothered me about this case was, while there's a lot of medical going on, there was communication, but I'm not sure how much was actually communicated with recommendations or discussion around euthanasia. That's something that I was trying to find throughout the medical record. And on the front load, it stated that they had been discussed with, possibly euthanasia or ventilation. I actually had a hard time finding that in the medical records, if that was part of the initial discussion. And again, I don't know if I'm getting too nitty gritty, but I also feel like whenever you're giving an update on this critical of a patient, that should continue to be a conversation and an option for care. Like at this point in time, this is where we're at, and we can continue with ventilation, or it's also not, not a bad thing to, consider euthanasia. So I'm having a hard time with this because that falls more of our own personal ethics versus maybe necessarily what the statutes say and the rules. I can say that I would probably have handled this differently, but again, it's not my word is not the law is the law. And so I'm not necessarily seeing I'm not seeing medical issues. I know that there's concern around the ventilation settings and things like that. I think a lot of times we see things on television or hear how things work and assume that it's always perfect, that there's this one setting and this is how it's going to be. But when we're dealing with ventilators, anesthesia machines, things like that, it's constant change. What works at this moment is not necessarily going to work in a half hour. The patient is constantly changing, their condition is constantly changing, so you are going to have those. And what worked here may cause a problem later. And so I think that's where we may have had, concerns, obviously, as an owner that might not understand all the ins and outs of that in hearing that. But, I guess that's where I lie. I'm here for, I'm open for discussion because, to me, I ethically feel one way. But, again, we are here to abide by the statutes and not what we feel is how we would have handled it.
Yeah, I would echo the case, the medicine here seems to be done fine. I don't have any problem with the medicine, so I agree with you that this is a communication issue. And it revolves, like you said, around euthanasia. And euthanasia is, and the way it's presented, there are very few veterinarians out there that go, you need to stop now, and we need to euthanize your pet. That's done, I don't know of any veterinarians that do that. It's up to the owners to decide and to ask questions. What's the prognosis right now? Next day, what's the prognosis now? What are we looking at? Continually ask that question. And so I agree with you, this is a communication issue. But was that communication by these various doctors adequate to help these clients make that decision? That's where my question lies.
Yeah, and mine too, because when I'm reading it and I'm reading the communication that transpired and you hear, oh, he's doing good, I'm like, how are we good if we're on a ventilator? Like I just the work usage is troublesome for me. And again, maybe I'm being too picky on that, but I don't know if we were very clear about, yes, we said 30% chance of coming off, but to the complainant's point, and the same thing with CPR, right? We offer CPR. Do you want a CPR? Do we discuss with clients what the odds are of that animal, once it recovers from CPR, actually walking out the door? No. It's a very low percentage, but we don't discuss those things, right? And so, the communication is there, and people are making these decisions because they hear that there's a chance, but not understanding that, one, that chance is either very low, or the outcome is, yeah, the chance is alive, but what is the overall outcome of that pet, right? And so I think it's a struggle that we're finding continuously as cases come here. Those conversations are not being had. It's going to continue to happen because our standards in veterinary medicine, our capabilities in veterinary medicine keep increasing, and people think of it kind of like human medicine, right? So, it's a communications piece, and
I think it was clear up front that the initial guess of a prognosis, and prognoses are typically more guesses than anything else, at 30%. I think that was clear. I think as we went through this case, that's where I started to get a little bit of uncomfortableness because you saw comments in there about, we've seen another dog recover from this. We've seen, you know, so it was like almost lending that the team actually thought that if they continued on that the dog could recover. When in actuality, if you look at the different types of things this dog had going in, I'm not even sure I would have said 30%. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think 30% it was a guess, and you can't say that's right or wrong. None of us really know, but, I mean, we had a lot of factors working against this dog, even going into it. This was not a straightforward non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema that happened because the dog got stressed at grooming. That was not the case here. This was a dog that had major issues. And so I guess I just, I'm not sure that I felt like that was communicated very well, but when you have these cases where it bounces from one doctor to another, we always run into this because it's the overnight doctor who really doesn't communicate as much with the owner, thinking that the daytime doctor did it, the main clinician on the case, and who was the main clinician on the case, and who was responsible for the communication with this owner and sharing what was happening. And that's where I find these things get a little bit wonky, because you've got five veterinarians here who thought they were doing the right thing.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there was that they knew this dog didn't have a chance and they continued with treatment. I don't believe that.
No, I think they thought it had a chance. I think that they, I think if you asked them, and I'm just guessing, that they would say the chances were very low.
Yeah.
But I think they thought it had a chance. So I don't think it was like they were just doing this to get money or anything like that. I really feel like they were trying to give it every chance they had, because they saw owners that were very dedicated and wanted every opportunity to have this outcome be different. That doesn't mean that they were very clear as to the prognosis. And outside of talking to them to get more information on that, I don't know that we'll have to.
Well, and I guess that's my question to the board is, do we feel that the communication issue drives to a violation? And if we do, then it's probably something that we push to an informal.
I think that if you look at the case, when you have critical care 24/7, you're going to have many doctors involved. Mm-hmm. And the thing that will help you or hurt you is the continuity of communication, because when you look at the medical record, and again, I get this was a really complicated case, but there was the continuity and follow through on the patient care. The issue is that whenever you're not communicating that to the people who are having to make the decisions as a pet owner, if they're moving forward or not, then you have a big gap, right? So of course it comes down to communication. And while 30% is 30%, it doesn't make the other 70% feel any better when it doesn't, when it goes that way, and especially in this case. So, I mean, I guess for me, I would like it to go to informal, because I think it would be a good opportunity to explore further from where the doctors were at medically, and to at least dig a little bit deeper, because I think that's what's being asked of us as a board, is we need to go a little bit deeper in this. Again, it's a very complicated case, and so yes, there's critical care pieces that are going to be more advanced, and ventilator use in veterinary medicine is not uncommon because we use it in anesthesia. However, when you're long-term ventilator use, that is unusual because our standards of care in veterinary medicine are not to the requested level of care that people have for their pets now. And so we're going to have this big step up where I think for these pet owners, we're way above our standard of care at this point, right? But it doesn't solve the issue of the gap for them when, again, what was being provided and what was being communicated, for them there's a gap. So at least to me, that's where I would agree with the informal piece.
And I don't disagree. Like I said, as I went through it, just you have more questions. And it's more of that communication. And then things like if we did say something, if it's not in the record, right? If it's not in the record, it didn't happen. And I know how tedious records can be. Gosh, that is the bane of all of our existence, right? but especially on a case like this. So I would make a move to remove cases 2519 through 2523 to move
formal. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. I go to section two, number two, case 2516 regarding Michelle Steamer, I'm gonna say that wrong, BBM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes. Let's see here. Case 2516, the complainant is Karen Crom, the respondent is Michelle Steamer, BBM. On June 12, 2023, Bailey, a 1-year, 4-month-old Maltese, was vaccinated for rabies and a Stouffer Parvo 1-year vaccines. Complainant contends these vaccines were good for 3 years, not 1 year, as respondent claims. Complainant wanted respondent to change the dog's medical record to reflect the vaccines were good for 3 years. On July 29, 2024, respondent spoke with complainant to advise that despite vaccines being labeled 3-year vaccines, based on the dog's age and vaccine guidelines, the vaccines were only good for 1 year. Then the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. We have Mr. Soul monitoring.
Yes, ma'am.
No respondent?
No respondent.
Okay. And then no complainant present? Okay. So I'm the lead on this case, and I read the complaint in detail along with, there was a case issued, case number for inquiry with Boehringer Ingelheim on the rabies vaccine. The respondent did record the phone call that she made because of the record keeping practices that she has for transcribing. And I found the phone call incredibly valuable because in the complaint it was asserted that the veterinarian was unprofessional and made some almost like derogatory comments, but when you listen to the call it was incredibly professional, and I felt like she did a really great job in her education practices. And so where a vaccine can be labeled 3 years, it is true that doesn't mean it shall be 3 years. A veterinarian is able to use their professional education and opinion whenever they record a vaccine. And so I found it odd, and I don't think that she followed up on it, but typically a manufacturer is going to defer to the veterinarian even if they license a vaccine in a certain way. So she did against medical advice update her record, which I found interesting, because again vaccines are indicated based on patient risk, age, and lifestyle. And there were some comments made that I thought I should address just for the record. There was a comment made, he's not an outside dog, he's not a big dog, and how would he get rabies? And so obviously there are many risks to that. You don't have to be outside to be potentially exposed. And so, and yes, Tucson, I do recall this just because I keep up on this thing. Tucson did have an interesting outbreak in rabies in early 2024, whenever this happened. So, rightfully so, I think that, you know, how she proceeded wasn't against any of our statutes or violations, and she was more than professional, so kudos to her. So, in this case, 2516, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We're going to go section two, number eight and number nine. This is case 2524 regarding Megan Helgeson, and then case 2525, Lauren Parker. Tracy, are these the same front load?
Yes.
Perfect. Could you please read those?
I'll go ahead and read those. Yes. Case 2524 and case 2525. The complainant is Marsha Lindquist and the respondent is Megan Helgeson, BBMMS, and Lauren Parker, BBM. On August 20th, 2024, Ziva, an 8-and-a-half-year-old female Australian Shepherd was presented to VetMed due to abdominal pain, drooling, and diarrhea. The dog was hospitalized for care and treatment. On August 22, 2024, the dog's care was transferred to Dr. Helgeson and Dr. Parker. They oversaw the dog's care through August 23, 2024, when the dog's care was transferred to an associate veterinarian. The dog was examined and treatments were adjusted based on the dog's condition. On August 26, 2024, the dog was discharged to complainant. Complainant expressed concerns that the dog had persistent diarrhea, which was not being treated by Dr. Helgeson and Dr. Parker. She requested to speak with Dr. Helgeson and did not receive a call from her, and Dr. Parker wanted to send the dog home before treatments for suspected pancreatitis were completed. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you. And then respondents, we have council monitoring? Okay, and no respondents present?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right, and then a complainant, Marsha Lindquist. Hi there. Go ahead and step forward.
Thank you.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
Of course. I am, it's part of my information.
Okay. Do you have any new information for us?
I do not have new information for you.
Okay, all right. Well, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you very much. I am Marsha Lindquist, owner of Ziva. While I know the investigative committee has recommended dismissing the issue against Dr. Helgeson and Dr. Parker with no violations, I am here to speak for Ziva and ask you to consider the extent of the damage to Ziva that occurred while she was in their care. This is a picture of the damage that was done to Ziva while she was there. Ziva's lesions progressed under their care. Just because Ziva is a long-haired dog does not absolve them of the responsibility to attend to the rampant diarrhea that caused her to be scalded, bloody raw, and red. Ziva was left unchecked and untreated. She stayed there 2 extra days beyond the point which she needed to be staying there for the abdominal issues and the Panaquil that she was administered because of the lack of attention. According to the board's regulations, the job of the veterinarian is to alleviate suffering and act in the best interest of their clients. Have an ethical responsibility to be honest and truthful. Demonstrate respect to all patients. These two veterinarians did not follow these principles. The board further says that the needs of the patient should be considered to relieve disease and suffering and minimize pain, fear, anxiety, stress, and distress. Ziva suffered miserably. One of the veterinarians on the investigative committee recited recent evidence about the excessive use of metronidazole for diarrhea. I know about that. Evidence-based medicine is to integrate the best research available with clinical expertise and considers the unique needs of the client. Metronidazole was needed in this case, and that is exactly what was used many days later. The investigative committee said the two veterinarians exercised good stewardship of Ziva. They did not, or she would not have been burned raw. See the picture that I'm holding up for you so that you can see what I saw when I got there. The investigative committee said she had good care. She did not have good care since her vet med stay lasted 2 days longer because of the lack of treatment and attention to her diarrhea. The lack of attention damaged Ziva. The investigative committee said it was unclear if metronidazole would help. It clearly did, as she began to improve within a day after the treatment began. I spent $10,000 at VetMed, $4,000 more because of the extra 2 days. The results of Ziva's experience are that she has recovered physically and mentally. However, her emotional health has been compromised. I fight for my dog. That is what the responsible owner does. I fought for my dog, but they made it worse. They failed to properly administer treatment. They just ignored Ziva. Clearly, I'm asking you to advance this to additional investigation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Questions for me?
Not traditionally, but I'll see. Do you have anything right now? Okay. Thank you so much for your time. You can go ahead and step back.
Thank you.
Okay, so Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on these two cases.
Okay, thank you. It's very unfortunate when this happens, and it is, again, unfortunately, something that does happen quite often with severe diarrhea in terms of the perianal and the anal perineal dermatitis that occurred. And so the complaint revolves around that issue and also the issue of the diarrhea not being treated appropriately. As far as the dermatitis that occurred, when you have severe diarrhea over several days, in the case of Ziva, it's going to be a continual problem. The complainant saw Ziva on 8/21, but then did not on 8/22 and 8/23, which is when the assertion is that she laid in feces and urine without any attention to the area by the doctors. The records, however, tell a little bit of a different story. There was attention to this dermatitis problem. There was application of silver sulfadiazine, if I said that right, I guess with insulin even, cold compresses, and they were aware of the problem and they were attending to it. Specifically on 8/23, there's a doctor's note in there that says that both of the respondents examined the area and notated the treatments that were being done for the problem. There are several references to cold compresses, SSD, topical pain management. I believe it was gabapentin added at that time because of the pain management for the dermatitis that was occurring, and we have pictures in the records, so it wasn't being ignored. And they were treating it. The follow-up care for it was indicated that it occurred and it healed. And this is what you have with severe diarrhea, unfortunately. Then as to the assertion that the diarrhea itself was not being treated, that's also not supported by the information we have, particularly the record. Supportive care in the case of severe diarrhea, the IV antibiotics, or excuse me, the IV fluids, very important. Dehydration is your big problem. That fluid was very important. Appropriate medications were administered at different times. Sucralfate, there were probiotics given, some bland diet considerations, and trying to use a bland diet. There was a discussion about the use of metronidazole. I'm not sure in a practical sense I agree that metronidazole would fall into that category of improper use of antibiotics. I think most veterinarians in a practical sense will use it, and even early in the treatment. So eventually it was used. I don't think it's if you give metronidazole, that's going to handle everything. It's going to treat the diarrhea. That's not the case. The supportive care, the probiotics, we don't have a magic bullet that we give for diarrhea and say, okay, we'll give this drug and that it will stop the diarrhea. We do all these other things, and they were being done, and nausea medications too. And actually, the diarrhea was improving at the time of release, as evidenced by the frequency of the diarrhea was decreasing. And so it was responding, like these cases do. It's really hard when a pet has a problem like this as a result of this severe enteritis colitis. And I certainly sympathize with the owner for having to then follow up and deal with that. It can cause swelling. It can cause even superficial ulceration. But that doesn't mean it wasn't being treated. And the hospital was paying attention to it, and it was on their list of problems. So I can't see anything that rises to the level of violation in this case. I think the communication was excellent. The records were very good. So in both of these cases, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation. So I'll start with 2424 and make the motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Personally, having provided nursing care on these cases, I've seen the photos, like, for Ziva, and, definitely the clip clean is probably the best thing to do for those long-haired dogs, because the amount of feces that can be retained in there, the scalding is just impossible to treat without the clip clean area. So, and it's something you kind of don't want to do on those long-haired dogs, but you have to. And then the amount of care and time to heal definitely extends past the hospitalization period. So, that you feel terrible for them because that's very uncomfortable, but it's incredibly common, I guess, at least in the setting I'm in, because I do work in an emergency setting. We see that quite a bit just because of the extent of the case by the time it's seen, So I'm glad Zita's, better, and she has somebody that advocates for her so well. But I just wanted to say that because I've definitely seen that before.
I would agree with that. I think that the line that start of the metronidazole is a lot of why we're here too, because once we started metronidazole, it seemed to improve, right? So I echo what Dr. Nosley said about there's so many other things that you're treating with a patient with severe diarrhea. It's not even so much just the diarrhea, right? The diarrhea doesn't bother me as much as all the secondary complications that come with it. And so sometimes, it's hard to say if we had started the metronidazole, would it have gotten better sooner? Maybe. But medicine is just that. It doesn't, you don't always know exactly what's going to work, and could it have caused some other issues? Maybe. And so I don't necessarily know that I find that it's a violation to not do it. I mean, I think it, for me, I don't even know. I would say I probably would have started it sooner, but I don't know that that's necessarily a violation. Like, exactly. I can't make it a violation, exactly. Actually. Yeah. I can say that I think that's just individual, that you make that determination as you're treating the case.
Okay. So we have a motion, a second, in case 2524. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
And then in case 2425, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Motion?
Second?
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. All right, section 2, number 10, case 2526, regarding Alyssa Thomas, DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Yes, case 2526, the complainant is Patricia Rodriguez, the respondent is Alyssa Thomas, PDM. On August 17, 2024, Asterion, a 6-month-old intact female German Shepherd mix, was presented to respondent on emergency due to seizures. There was a discrepancy amongst the family in how long the dog had been seizing. It may have been weeks or months, but the dog had gotten worse on this day. The dog was evaluated and diagnosis were performed. Respondent relayed the results, which included anemia and foreign material in the dog's stomach. There was a concern the dog had a mental toxicity, therefore surgery was recommended. Complainant